Okay, welcome to part two of Confidence Quick Start, overcoming the three fears of English speaking. So, in the first part, I gave you kind of an overview of the course, and I talked about the three fears. That is the fear of failure, rejection, and embarrassment. And I talked about the kind of the evolutionary function that fear has played in our evolution, and why it's kind of important to us. And now in this second part, I'm going to go over these three fears in detail. I'm going to give you some concrete examples from my life so that you can hopefully just learn from the mistakes that I've made and get over these kind of things quicker and with less hassle. Again, as I said in part one, this is really an 80-20 approach to confidence. I'm aiming to give you 80% of the result for just a tiny bit of effort, just 20% of the effort to get 80% of the result. So this is not comprehensive, but it will give you the biggest bang for your buck, if that makes sense. That means the biggest kind of reward for the smallest amount of time and effort. So let's go straight into this. The first key fear that we're going to look at is the fear of failure. Fear of failure. We all fear failure. Nobody likes to fail. It feels bad to fail at something, at anything. When you have a conversation in English and things break down, it feels bad. For example, maybe in a meeting or something and you don't really understand what's going on, and it gets to the point where your co-worker translates for you into your native language, and it's a terrible feeling. It's really uncomfortable and it feels bad. That's a work example, but you know, in any kind of situation in your life when you're using English and things you don't understand, somebody asks you a question and you answer with completely the wrong answer or something, again, it feels bad. It feels bad to fail. However, it's extremely important that you learn to change the way you think about failure. The key to overcoming this fear is, again, first being aware of it, second noticing it, and then changing the way that you think about it. What I mean by this is failure is not a bad thing. Making mistakes is not a bad thing. In fact, I believe it's a good thing. Oscar Wilde once said, "Experience is simply the name we give our mistakes." What this means is that we learn from our mistakes. We learn from experience. We learn from doing. And mistakes are a part of that. When we make a mistake, or when we fail, we learn what doesn't work. And the best and most, the fastest way to find out what does work is to simply eliminate the things which don't work, one by one by one, and then eventually we're left with a success and nothing else. The greatest kind of business minds in history, entrepreneurs or anything, have all failed again and again. I once heard a wonderful story, and I don't remember where I read this, about a company, FedEx, I hope I've got that right, the kind of huge American postal service. And again, I'm remembering this story for something I read years and years ago, so I hope I'm getting it right. But the guy who started FedEx, the owner. On the day that they opened for business, can you guess how many parcels they sent? One. They sent one parcel. And they sent that themselves. So, actually, they didn't send anything. A lot of people would see that as a massive failure. You know, they all this promotion, all this everything they'd done, and they opened for business, and the only parcel they sent was one parcel that they sent themselves. A lot of people would get down about that. But this guy, again, I really don't remember his name, didn't. He said, great, fantastic, we learned how to send a parcel, one parcel, and we learned how not to promote our business. So, you know, you learn from your failures and you learn from your mistakes. A story that I always share in, a story that I shared in two-step speaking, one of the lessons in two-step speaking, I teach this. About a story about a pottery teacher. There was once a pottery teacher. He had a class of students learning to make pots. And at the end of the course, he said, right guys, it's time to do the final exam, get your final grade. And what he did, without the students knowing, he split them into two groups. And said to this group, you guys, you're going to get graded on the quality of your pot. You've only got to make one pot, but it's got to be perfect. It has to be the best pot ever. The better your pot, the higher the quality, the better the grade you get will be. Now, to this group over here, he said something very different. He said to them, hey, you're going to get graded on the quantity, the amount of pots you make. The more pots you make, the higher your grade. I don't care how good they are. It doesn't matter if they're good or it doesn't matter if they're crap. All you've got to do is make a lot of pots. It's quantity, not quality. Just make a lot. So the students all go away and they make their pots. And then at the end, the pottery teacher gets all the pots and he gathers them all, he mixes them all up and he puts them on a table. And then he calls in some friends from outside. He's like, hey guys, come and have a look at these pots. And they come in and he says, they don't know about this experiment. And he says, look at these pots. Pick the best ones. Pick one each. Which one do you think is best? So these guys, they all pick a pot. And without exception, well, which group do you think got chosen? If you're a two-step speaking member, obviously you know the answer to this. But which group do you think got chosen? The quality side or the quantity side? Well, the quality side, of course. I mean, their job was to make a perfect pot. But actually, no. If you said the quality side, boo-boo, you're wrong. It was actually the quantity side. Without exception, it was the guys who didn't have to make a good pot, they just had to make a lot, who made the best pots. What happened? Well, these guys who had to make a perfect pot, they were put under a lot of pressure to succeed, under a lot of pressure to perform and to make a perfect pot. But there is no such thing as a perfect pot. It's a process that you learn by doing. So these guys who just made pot after pot after pot after pot, you know, with each iteration of their pot, with each kind of repetition, that is, of the process, you know, they noticed, oh, this is not so good, this is not so good. They noticed their mistakes, they noticed their failures, the imperfections, the flaws in the pots. And then slowly, over time, they fix those mistakes. And eventually they're left with a really high quality pot. It's exactly the same for learning English or any skill. It's a process and you have to have this kind of mindset where you're not fixed trying to be this perfect thing. You have to look at it as a process. Failure equals learning. When we mess up, we learn how not to do something. And that is as good as, if not better, than doing something well. Nobody is perfect, and that's a good thing. Perfect things, well, I don't think perfect things exist. But if something was perfect, It means it's complete. It can't change anymore. And the only things which can't change are lifeless and dead. I've given you a couple of examples of this already, but let me give you an example from my own life. Several years ago now, when I took my master's course, I took a master's in applied linguistics and English teaching, and I did pretty well throughout the course. And when it came to my dissertation, I was in the position where if I got a good grade for my dissertation, over a 70, I would graduate the course as a whole as a master's with distinction. And that's really good. It's quite hard to get. So I was really focused on getting this grade, getting this score. And I worked really hard on it. I had 6 months, 6 months to do it. And I spent, I worked on it pretty fast. I worked really hard on it. I was lucky that I was doing it during a summer holiday. So I actually had 2 months off of work where I could basically just work on it full time. And I did everything and I got it all done. And I thought, this is perfect. I'm going to get over 70. I'm going to get the grade that I need easily, no problem. But no, it was very important and I wanted to be sure. So I used one of these kind of critique services, and I paid a lot of money to have somebody read through my dissertation and give me feedback and critique on that. I was pretty confident. I thought, well, this is probably a waste of money. I don't really need to do this, but I was just doing it just in case. And then I got the feedback back. It wasn't good. It really wasn't good. In fact, it was terrible. When I saw the guy said, right, this is the score you're probably going to get for this. It was like half what I needed. And he gave me a list of reasons why. And he was like, your research method is flawed. You've made mistakes in the design that cannot be recovered from. He said, your literature review is not very good. You needed to do more reading. You needed to write more about this. That could have been fixed fairly easily. But he said, your research design, you made mistakes in your research design. And there's no way you're going to get a decent grade for this because of those mistakes. So I was absolutely gutted, shocked, distraught. I spent about 2 days just pissed off with this guy, pissed off at myself. And I really got quite down about it. And I was just like, how could it be this bad? How could I be such an idiot? How could I make those mistakes? This guy who critiqued it, he's an arsehole. Why did he tell me all these things? But then I realized, well, kind of talking to my wife, actually. My wife kind of said, well, you know, you've got 6 months. That means you've got 5 weeks left, 4.5 weeks, 5 weeks left. Can't you do anything? And I said, no, it's too late. I can't fix these mistakes. I can't do anything. And then I thought about it and I thought, well, I might as well give it a go. And by this time I was already back at work, back into the second term of school. I was pretty busy at school. I thought, right, now I'm going to do this. I'm going to do what it takes. I started to get up at about, it was sometimes before 4 o'clock in the morning to do this. I basically, all the spare time I had to do it, I worked on it. And I redid the entire thing. I redesigned the research methodology, plan, everything. I got new participants in. I collected data again. I did all the analysis again. I completely scrapped the literature review, everything. I read more books, more academic papers, more articles, and the whole thing. Well, you know, I had a base. I had a base to work from. But I redid the entire thing in about 4 weeks. And it was actually the only time when I have basically stayed up all night to finish something. The few days before it had to be handed in, I stayed up all night. I didn't sleep for a few days to get it finished. And I did it. I did it. And in fact, you can see the final result here. This was my master's dissertation. Pretty thick dissertation. And I did it. I needed a 70 to get a distinction, and I got a 70. I got bang on the mark I needed. Not 1 point over, not 1 point below. So I graduated with a master's with distinction. I couldn't have done that if I hadn't have chosen to learn from my mistakes and from my failures. If I hadn't have chosen to see my failures for what they were, mistakes to be learned from, I wouldn't have been able to do that. It was only because I looked at the mistakes I made in the research design and I thought, right, I'm going to learn from these, I'm not going to make the same mistakes again, that I was able to do that. Right, let's go on to point two, the fear of rejection. This is another big fear. Again, everybody fears rejection, but everybody gets rejected. Rejection is a normal part of life. It happens to everybody, but yeah, it feels bad. Rejection never feels good. But I'm going to argue that rejection, or fearing rejection, is a total waste of time. The reason why is because rejection is nothing to do with you. Rejection is to do with the person who does the rejecting. When you are rejected, it is not because of you, but the person rejects you because of their own beliefs, their own knowledge, their own history, their own experiences, their own biases. So it really isn't something you can control, because you can't change the way a person thinks. You can't change the way a person acts. So there is nothing you can do. And if there is nothing you can do, it's pointless worrying about it. And people do also tend to develop kind of reactions and reject things or people by default. So again, it's not something that you can help. To give you an example of this, I worked at a Japanese company here in, well, Japan, in Tokyo. It was a company dealing with English services, but I wasn't a teacher exactly. I was working in the office on the business side of things. And as part of that, I needed to answer the phone quite a lot. And every single day, without fail, we'd get salesmen calling the office, sometimes multiple times a day. You know, they'd call up and they'd be like, we're selling photocopiers. Do you need a photocopier? And we'd be like, no, there's a photocopier right here. We don't need a photocopier. You know, they'd be selling all manner of things, photocopiers, office equipment, advertising services, website design services, everything you can imagine. And we just get people cold calling us day after day after day after day. And it got to be a real problem, because I was really busy. I had loads of things to do. I had projects to manage, you know, all kinds of things I had to get done. And the bloody phone is ringing every day with these salesmen calling, selling things that we just didn't need, we weren't interested in. So I quickly developed a reaction to that. The second I heard the salesman on the phone, I'd just be like, no, we're not interested, I'm sorry, goodbye. And I just cut them off. I didn't even find out what they were selling most of the time. It might have been something I was really interested in. Might not have even been people selling things, although I'm pretty sure I never made that mistake. But the point is I developed a reaction based on my own biases, my own experience, my own situation, and that is why I rejected them. Not because their sales pitch was bad, not because what they were selling was bad, not for any reason for them, but for my own reasons. And that is the same for you. If you apply for a job, you go to a job interview and you get rejected, it's not your fault. There's a really hot girl that you like, or a cute guy that you like, and you say, hey, you want to go out for dinner? And they say, what? With you? No. That is not your fault. It's not something that you can control. It's not something that you can help. So there's no point in worrying about it. Really, the problem with rejection, it's not the fact that you get rejected that's the problem. The problem is your reaction to it. But like I've said, it's not under your control. So having this kind of reaction where you're thinking, oh, what is it about me? What's so bad about me? Why did I not get the job? Why doesn't she want to go on a date with me? Why doesn't he think I'm cute? Why? Is it me? What? Is my personality bad? Am I ugly? What is it? Am I just not good at my job? It's not worth worrying about those things because, again, it's so subjective and it's not you that is the problem. It's their opinions and their biases that is the problem. So that kind of reaction is pointless. It's absolutely pointless. To give you an example of this, again, I'm going to try and give you an example from my life for each of these 3 points. But my good example of this is, again, I always say a couple of years ago, but, you know, it's so vague. I'd say about 4 years ago now, quite a while ago. I applied for a job at a university right down in the south of Japan. And it's a national university. If you don't know what a national university is, because I guess each country has a different kind of system. In Japan, a national university is a university that is not privately owned, but is run by the country, i.e. it's paid for by tax. They tend to be very high level, and they are considered to be the good universities in Japan. It's a national university, and I have friends working there. And actually, they introduced me, and they are the ones who said, like, we've got a job going, why don't you apply for it? So I thought, great, had the experience I needed. I thought I had the experience I needed. I thought, yeah, I can do this job, no problem. I'm going to get this, easy. Yeah, I've got friends who work there. Hell, the guys on the team hiring people are friends of mine. Of course I'm going to get it. So I applied for it. Then I sat back thinking, right, well, I need to start planning moving down to the south of Japan because I'm going to be doing this great university teaching job. Then a couple of weeks later, got the letter, opened it up. I failed. They rejected me. I was just like gobsmacked. I was just like, what? I didn't get it. But these guys are friends of mine. They introduced me to the job. Why didn't I get it? And I was stunned. Didn't know what to say or do. And I started to think all these terrible things. I started to think, oh God, I'm not a good teacher. Maybe they can see that I'm a terrible teacher. I'm a terrible person. Oh man, my personality must be just really, really bad. And well, yeah, of course they didn't want to take me. I mean, who would want to take somebody as bad as me? Somebody who can't teach and somebody who has a bad personality. And so I think, well, maybe my English is not very good either on all my Japanese. And maybe, you know, maybe I had spelling mistakes in my CV. And well, I started to think all these terrible things, and at the end of it, I just thought that I was just useless and I was ready to go and shoot myself or something. It wasn't until about 2 months later that I actually found out that the university had a rule where they wouldn't hire anybody who didn't have experience working at a national university. So they said, we wanted to hire you, but it was out of our hands. We had to hire somebody else. Because of this rule, which couldn't be broken, it was just this university happened to have this rule, which couldn't be broken. I didn't have experience teaching at a national university, and it automatically cancelled me out. That was it. Nothing to do with me, not really. So, you know, what can you do about that? Absolutely nothing. So again, it's like I said, rejection is nothing to do with you. It is the side that does the rejecting is the side with the problem. So just as the song, the Frozen song goes, let it go. Right, let's go into point number three. The fear of embarrassment. Now, this is the big one, isn't it? The fear of embarrassment. The fear, everybody fears being embarrassed. Nobody likes being embarrassed. And when combined with these other fears, the fear of failure and the fear of rejection, a fear of embarrassment stops us dead in our tracks. It stops us from moving forward. In kind of an immediate situation, it stops us from acting when we should. And in a kind of more long-term situation, it stops us moving forward and it stops us doing the things that are important to us and maybe important for our lives. It really does hold people back, but it shouldn't. You mustn't let the fear of embarrassment hold you back. You really, really, really can't do it. You just mustn't do it. You've got to just fight past that feeling. Because, again, like I said in part one, I am somebody who has struggled with confidence all my life. I was a very, very shy person, especially when I was younger. And I would feel very embarrassed about the stupidest things. Like, when I was in school, I would never raise my hands. Not because I didn't know the answer, or I feared getting the answer wrong, but because I was embarrassed to speak out in front of the class. And I could never go to the toilet, like, in the school or during class, because I was embarrassed to ask the teacher if I could go to the toilet. And I remember one time when I had a really bad stomach and I really, really needed to go to the toilet. But even though I was in so much pain and my stomach was cramping up and I felt like, well, you know, I'm not going to say it, but I'm sure you understand. It was agonizing. I was in so much pain and I really needed to go to the toilet, but I was too embarrassed to ask the teacher if I could go. And I sat through the whole lesson, sweating, trying to hold it back, keep it in, as it were. And it was just the worst feeling. But that is the sort of, that is what embarrassment does to people. Embarrassment stops you from moving forward. But here's the thing. When we don't do something, when we fail to take action because we are embarrassed, it is not because of something real. It is because of our imagination. We imagine all these terrible things that are going to happen. We think, if I do this, people are going to laugh at me. People are going to think I'm stupid. They're going to reject me. I'm never going to have any friends again. And it stops us from doing things. But our imaginations are very, very powerful. Much more powerful than reality. And we tend to imagine the worst possible scenario. Things that are totally unrealistic and unlikely. But that's how we imagine it. And we always think that things are going to happen that probably are not going to happen. It's never going to work out like that. A book that I recommend that everybody reads is a book called You Can Be Happy by a guy called Richard Carlson. I'm sorry, You Can Be Happy No Matter What by a guy called Richard Carlson. The title, yeah, it's very kind of self-help, self-development. Self-help and self-development books are great, but I know the title, You Can Be Happy No Matter What, it always struck me as not being a very good title. I don't know, it feels too kind of like, ooh, it's hard to explain. But it's a really, really good book. And one of the things that Richard Carlson talks about is the nature of our thoughts, things going on in here, in our head. And thoughts, he says, are just thoughts. That's it. That's all they are. Thoughts are thoughts. They are not reality. Thoughts are not real. They're not even grounded in reality. They're just thoughts, just our imagination. And we don't have to act on things that are not real. We don't have to act on things that are just our imagination. Things that are not real. Things that are not reality. Because thoughts are not reality. Things that are not real shouldn't be a barrier to us. They shouldn't stop us from doing things. Because when you say, oh, sod it, and you take the risk, when you take the risk and you risk embarrassment, even if you do screw up and you do get embarrassed, you will find that what actually happens is nowhere near as bad as what we imagine will happen. Because like I said, thoughts are just thoughts. Thoughts are not real. We don't have to worry about them. You think something might be embarrassing? Who cares? Do it anyway. Just go for it. Doesn't matter whether it's you're in a meeting and you're speaking English and you've got something to say. Try. Just go for it. Maybe you're a teacher and you're teaching in English and you're a bit kind of shy about your English in front of your students. Who cares? Just go for it. You don't need to care. And most of the time, like imagine you're giving like a presentation, or again, it could be a meeting. Look at the people in the room. I say a meeting, but you know, it could be like a business meeting. Maybe like I think I mentioned before the example of maybe you're like part of a book club or something like that, or like a social group or whatever. Look at the people around you and ask yourself, do I care what they think of me? The answer is almost definitely no. So if you don't care what these people who you don't know think of you, like imagine you go to a pub in the UK and somebody hands you a microphone and says, hey, do karaoke in front of the pub. And you look at the people around you, you don't know any of them, they're all having their own conversations, drinking. You think, I don't know any of these people. Do I care what they think of me? No. So what do you have to be embarrassed about? Sod it. Go for it. Do the karaoke, even if you can't sing. Same with a presentation. I mean, whatever. Go for it. Do you care? No. And even if it is a situation on somebody where you do care about what they think of you, and you kind of don't want to lose their respect, you've got to ask yourself, what is the worst possible thing that can happen? If that happens, will this person stop respecting me? The answer is almost definitely no. In which case, what have you got to worry about? Nothing. So go for it. To give you, again, to give you another example from my own life, actually this is somewhere where I didn't screw up. So you can't really learn from my mistakes here, but try and learn from my example. I am a terrible, 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 terrible singer. Really, really, really bad. I am so bad at music. I can't play an instrument. I can't sing. In fact, I actually don't really listen to music that much. When I was much younger, when I was a teenager, I listened to a lot of rock music and things, but sometimes I still listen to some music. Gary Numan, The Cure. Sometimes I even listen to classical music. But it's not my strong point. It's not something that I'm good at. And I'm really bad at singing. You know when you hear people and it's an absolute mess. And you just think, God, how could somebody sing so badly? Are they joking? That's how I sing. When I first came to Japan, the first year I was in Japan, I was teaching as an assistant at an elementary school, a primary school. Not in Tokyo, outside of Tokyo. And some of the teachers near Christmas, just before the winter holiday, they asked me, will you go in the school assembly, will you go up on the stage and sing "We Wish You a Merry Christmas" with the kids? And I thought, uh-huh, oh, that's going to be embarrassing. But I thought, well, I could say no. I could say, oh, I can't sing, I can't sing, I can't do it, I can't do it, I can't do it. And that's what I wanted to say. That's what I really, really wanted to say. But I thought, well, what's going to happen if I do that? The teachers are going to feel bad for asking me to do it. The students are going to think I'm kind of stupid for not doing it. They're going to be like, ooh, Julian Sensei, he can't sing, oh. So I thought, well, whatever. All right, I'll do it. So I stood up on the stage, microphone in hand, and depths of my heart, I sang, "We wish you a Merry Christmas." You can probably get an idea of how bad I am at singing just from that. And that is the part that I'm good at. And from there, it just goes downhill. And none of the students sang with me like they were supposed to. None of the teachers sang with me. The students all just sat there like, and the teachers were just like, and here's me on the stage singing like a total idiot, completely out of tune. At the end, a couple of students went, and that was it. One of the teachers said, "Thank you, Julian." They didn't ask me to sing again. But afterwards, in class, lots of the students, like, you know, it became a good joke. It became something to talk about. The students were like, "You can't sing." And I was like, "Neither can you." And, you know, then we start sang songs in English class, and the students were like, "Well, you can't sing anyway, I can't sing, so let's just do it anyway." And it became fun, and, you know, it was fine. And then recently, a similar situation, in the Doing English Plus community, one of the members, Sebastian, said, let's have a karaoke session in the community. Let's make some videos of ourselves singing a song. Great way to practice our English, practice our pronunciation. And everybody was like, "Yeah, let's do it, that's a great idea." And then somebody said, "Well, Julian, you go first. And of course, because I'm like the owner and I'm managing the whole thing, I couldn't really say no. So I thought, okay, I'll do it. So I made a video of myself singing "Country Road." Actually, I didn't sing the whole thing. I sang enough to make my point, and then I stopped. But what was the worst thing which happened from that? Did I lose any members from doing English Plus? Did any students quit because I couldn't sing? No. Did I lose respect? No. In fact, if anything, I gained respect from doing something uncomfortable and something difficult, because we all know how hard that is. Did I want to record a video of myself singing? No. But it's okay. There's nothing to be embarrassed about. Just do it anyway. Nothing bad happened. So the point there is, really, is if you think something's going to be embarrassing, don't let that stop you. It's not a good reason not to do something. Just do it anyway. Right, which brings me to the end, the final part of this mini course, conclusion and action plan, moving on from here. So, throughout this mini course, I've talked about the three fears that English learners, and really anybody in any kind of situation, faced. And I've given you real examples from my life, and I've given you other examples as well. Your job now is to pay attention to yourself. When you're speaking English, speaking your native language, any situation, it doesn't matter. Pay attention for yourself. And notice the times when you're starting to get these feelings, when you're starting to get this fear of kind of failing, making a mistake. This fear of being rejected by somebody or something. This fear of being embarrassed about something. Really start to notice those things. Look for the kind of the triggers, the things that make you feel that way. And what I want you to do, this is going to be hard and it's going to take time. But again, the beginning is awareness. First, you've got to be aware of yourself. And then you've got to be aware of the things, the problems, the fears. Then you've got to start to notice them in yourself. Then what I want you to do is I want you to use that feeling, that feeling of fear. You know what I mean. It's very hard to explain. It's like a feeling in your stomach, like a tight feeling in your stomach, and your breathing starts to become shallow and maybe your mind starts to go blank. Use that as a sign. When you feel like that, say to yourself, yes, this is a chance for me to learn. This is a chance for me to get better. This is a chance for me to improve myself and to become a better, stronger, more confident person. It doesn't matter whether it's speaking English, it doesn't matter what the situation, you should always be trying to become a better person at everything you do. Everything that is important in your life, you should be striving and aiming to become the best possible version of yourself that you can. So when you get that feeling of fear, use it as a sign and say to yourself, yes, 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 this is exactly the kind of situation I'm looking for. This is what I need to become a better person. And just do it. Don't think about it at all. Just do it. Promise yourself that every time you feel fear like this, that you will just do it. If you screw up, it doesn't matter. If you fail, great. You've just learned something. If you get rejected, whatever. Who cares? If you feel embarrassed, it doesn't matter. That's not something to worry about. Just make it a habit to take action. Use this feeling of fear as a cue to take action, to do something, to become a much better person. Right. So, that is the end of this mini course. I would love to hear your feelings on this mini course. I would love to hear your stories. So, what I want you to do is, somewhere on this page, there'll be my email address or a way to contact me. Or, well, you probably know how to contact me already. Send me an email. Tell me, say, hey, Julian, I've just been through the Confidence Quick Start course. Tell me what you thought of the course. Give me your feedback. Tell me your opinions. And tell me about a time when you felt these fears. Tell me about a time when you felt afraid of failing. Tell me about a time when you felt afraid of being rejected, when you felt kind of alone and like you had been rejected by the world or whatever. Tell me about a time when you were so embarrassed that you just couldn't move forward. I love to hear people's opinions, feedback on the courses they make, but I also love to hear people's own stories and own examples. So really, really think about the times in your life when you have felt like this and you've had these fears and it's stopped you from being the confident person that you should be. Really think about them, reflect on them, and yeah, share those stories. Share them with me. And if you're a Doing English Plus member, go ahead and share them in the community. Share them with everybody else. We can all learn from each other's mistakes. We can all learn from each other's failures and shortcomings. So, that is it from me. This is Julian. This is, or was, Confidence Quick Start. And this is me signing off. Goodbye.